So it is my pleasure to get ready to turn the floor over to your first speaker, Matt Jefferson, who will be joining us from EPA's Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation. So Matt, I'm going to turn the spotlight over to I'm going to let you pull up the screen and I'll confirm once we can see your slides. Okay, so Matt, hopefully you can pull those slides up. I see them up full screen. The floor is yours.
Okay, thank you, Jean, and thank you guys so much. We're so glad that you guys could join us for today's training on QuickScore 3.2.2 for Superfund site assessments. And my name is Matt Jefferson. I'm here within the Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation here in Washington, D.C. And so today, what I'll do is give a brief introduction and a quick score overview. And then my co-presenter, Rebecca Kent, will talk a little bit about, we'll give the quick score demonstration and a couple of final thoughts. And then we welcome any types of questions here that you have. Feel free, again, as Jean had mentioned, use that Q&A pop-up to ask your questions here. Rebecca is going to pause at a couple moments in her presentation to answer those particular questions, but please ask your questions at any point in time for us. Thank you so much. All right, so we want to go to our first polling question, know a little bit more about you. And so have you used QuickScore before?
All right, Matt, I have launched that poll. The audience should see a new floating window on their screen. You can click the circle to the left of the answer that most closely matches your response and then hit that submit button at the bottom. About 84% of the audience have cast their responses, so I'll go ahead and close it here in just a moment. Let me count down to 3, 2, 1, with almost 90% of you having voted. And I'll share the results. And Matt, interestingly enough, more than half of the audience have not used QuickScore before, and about 44% have.
Fantastic. Well, thank you guys for giving your thoughts here on that question here. So we'll jump right into QuickScore. So QuickScore, for the half of you that are unfamiliar with this, is an assisting tool for scoring your sites using the Hazard Ranking System, or HRS, here. And so some of the key features do include a quick HRS pathway for score calculations. And pathway, what we mean by pathway is what type of media are you trying to score it on, whether it be soils, groundwater, surface water, air, subsurface intrusion, all those ones that are out there, and seeing how that matches up with the HRS here. Another feature is it provides an HRS score sheet for preparing and printing. And, you know, what I like most about this is that it is an easy identification for understanding what type of gaps you have in terms of the HRS in your conceptual site model, your understanding of what the site looks like here, and seeing where you might need to gather some more additional information to make that package stronger, make that your thoughts on getting this into an HRS package. And then the other benefit of this is it's a back of the envelope tracking for HR for data gaps, notes, and any type of refinements or adjustments that you might have in scenario testing. So what you may consider is, well, I may gather this type of information. How would that affect my score? I may need to refine my understanding of the population. How would that affect my score? So you get a chance to test some of those theories out using QuickScore. And that's another good benefit here. So drilling down a little bit deeper. So what can you do with QuickScore? Who does use QuickScore? And what do you need as far as QuickScore is concerned? So we're going to pop open the next poll question here. And how long have you been working in site assessment?
Okay, so we have a new window floating on the screen, this time with a series of options. You may need to scroll up and down to see the complete range of choices that you can select from. And this will give you a series of time brackets regarding how long you have been working in site assessment. If you don't work in that area, you can pick the last option that says, I do not work in site assessment. If anybody's on a mobile device, you may see a pop-up, or you may have to click the three dots more option to access the poll window on your mobile device. Looking at just over 93% of the audience having shared their response. And so, Matt, I'm going to go ahead and end this poll and share the results. And this is quite a range in distribution. So it does look like the majority of the audience works in the area of site assessment, but they're pretty evenly dispersed through that time bracket. I mean, 20% have less than 1 year. 20% have more than 15 years, and then some smackering throughout the other age brackets, although I think a little bit more leaning towards early in their experience with site assessment.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Jean, and thank all of you for responding to our poll question here. So just a quick reminder here, remember this, we do have a disclaimer, the data and the results on these scores rely upon your understanding of the adherence and rules of the HRS. So please use this product, these products do not guarantee that a package, an HRS package submitted for MPL consideration is either qualified or compliant with the rules of the HRS. And so me and my team, we review all these packages that are submitted here for quality assurance and compliance with the HRS. So oftentimes when we first see a package that's out there, these packages go through several iterations, but QuickScore does give you a quick look at what you might have as far as the status of your HRS package. So a couple of, before we go into the demonstration, we want to point out a couple of websites that are related to the QuickScore. Here's the website related to downloading the QuickScore itself and to be able to register for information updates, like any type of updates that happen with the program itself. Also included is a QuickScore tip sheet and a user's guide. And then we also have a couple other useful links. We have the Superfund Chemical Data Matrix, or SCDMS, SCDM, here that is also sort of works alongside with QuickScore, and along with HRS tools and resources, various types of trainings here as well. If you have any questions, feel free to contact us. If you have questions, any type of suggestions that you have for us or a need for technical assistance, feel free to phone us at area code 703-284-6600 or email us at quickscore@gdit.com. And we are looking forward to hearing from you here. And now I'm going to pass the mic over to Rebecca Kent, who's going to provide demonstration.
Hello, everybody. Just let me share my screen here real quick, and we'll get started with the demo portion of this. There we go. So I am Rebecca Kent, and I've been supporting EPA for a little over 20 years now. On and off, I've been doing the QuickScore helpline throughout that 20 years. So if you've emailed the helpline or given us a call, chances are you've talked with me there. We are always happy to hear from you guys, whether it's questions or suggestions or even just, hey, nice job. We do like to hear from you. So please feel free to give us an email or send us a call, and we will hopefully address your questions, or we can take your suggestions in consideration for future updates to QuickScore. So we'll start out here with the website. When you come to the website, you can see that it has a little bit of information about QuickScore itself and the functionality of QuickScore. And we have this QuickScore notifications that you can see there. And that will allow you to sign up to receive notifications about QuickScore. And we won't send you a whole lot of emails, maybe 2 to 3 a year. Some years you may not get any from us. And we'll only send you an email if there's been an update to QuickScore itself, if there's been an update to SCDM and you need to update those values in QuickScore, or in cases like where we have these webinars to let you know that we have some training coming up that you might be interested in doing. We won't send you anything that's not really related to QuickScore, and we won't spam you with a bunch of stuff there. If you have registered and your email address has changed since you've registered, if you want to go ahead and sign up again, that way you can be sure to get those notifications. We would appreciate it that. But you don't have to register in order to use QuickScore. It's just kind of a way to allow EPA to let you know when things have changed that you may need to come back and download the application again. here are the download instructions and the executable to get QuickScore onto your computer. And we have some useful links there, again, to some HRS tools and resources, to Skidome. And then there's a tip sheet. And that tip sheet is a short PDF that has some basic questions that we received over the course of time that we've been doing this helpline. You know, typical questions that we get. We thought we would put it in a tip sheet to answer some of those most popular questions we get, or give you some suggestions on how to use QuickScore, things to do there. So if you have a question, that's a great place to start on that tip sheet. And we do have a full user guide, a PDF version of that. And that's another great place to go. That's a little bit more lengthy and has very specific details on how to install and how to use QuickScore. And it has some printout examples and things like that from QuickScore as well. So if you have questions, great place to start is the tip sheet and then go to the user guide. And if you can't find what you need in there, then definitely give us a call or send us an email. And that's that contact information. Again, we try to put that information out there quite a bit. So hopefully you'll see it in one of the places. I think it's also within the user guide too. So you can get that information. And the number and email hasn't changed in quite a while. So definitely reach out to us if you do have questions about QuickScore. So that's the website and where you're going to go to get the installation files for this. For those of you who haven't used QuickScore before, it's a great place to start just to read a little bit there and be able to download the application itself. When you open QuickScore, you come to the homepage here. And the homepage has some basic information about QuickScore. This here. And I've actually zoomed in a little bit here, so it's a little short, and I will show you a screen capture of the information on there. So I tried to zoom in so you guys could see the content a little bit easier here. I know it can be a little bit difficult to read when you're doing these webinars and people are sharing their screens. So this is the homepage, and it's what you see when you open QuickScore. It has a quick overview about who created QuickScore and how it was intended to be used. It has the date and the version of QuickScore. And if you call or email the helpline with a question, I'm probably going to ask you what version of QuickScore you're using. So you find that on the homepage. And you can get back to the homepage anywhere in the QuickScore application just by clicking on this QuickScore home button. Then you'll see it tells you when the Skidome values are current as of. And this is a newer feature to QuickScore. Originally, Skidome wasn't really updated that frequently, but in the last like 5 or so years, they've tried to start doing updates twice a year to Skidome. And every time they did an update, the users had to download and reinstall QuickScore. And that's not exactly easy for folks these days. You usually have to get your IT group involved to give you permissions or install that for you. So we were trying to come up with a way that would be easier for the users to get the updated Skidome values versus having to go out there and download and reinstall a new application. So we have this update Skidome values button. And when you come in, if you do need an update, you'll see it says updates available. And what you'll do is you just click on that button, and you do need to have internet access to update the values. And it'll give you a little pop-up that tells you the update was successful, and you click OK. That little update needed goes away, and it tells you when, you know, it did update the value here to be July 2022. So when they do update Skidome, we will send you an email from the helpline to let you know that that was updated and you need to go out there to do it in case you don't see that little message there when you log into QuickScore for the first time. And it does tell me it was updated successfully. We do know that there are a few people who aren't able to use that button to update the values, and there is a way to manually do that, which we describe in both the user guide and the tip sheet. But if you have difficulties with that, just give us a call and we can walk you through that. It just involves you downloading a file and then putting it in a specific place within your computer files. Then again, we have a link to the QuickScore web pages. And here I'll flip over to the Word document so you can see a little bit more on what's cut off on my screen. We do have that. This is the homepage, and we do have that helpline information and that disclaimer that Matt walked us through. And really, that just means that your score is only going to be as good as that information that you put into QuickScore, and it will still be subjected to EPA headquarters for inspection if you are doing it for an official NPL listing in consideration. So that information is also on the homepage. You just can't see it because of how I am zoomed into the homepage there. In addition to the QuickScore home button, we have a QuickScore help button. And when you press that help button, it opens up some help files, and it has the user guide in there, and it's hyperlinked with a table of contents. So the same user guide that's available on the web as a PDF is also within the QuickScore application. It has a link to Skidome here. You can open up that, and it describes a little bit about Skidome and how you can access Skidome. And then we have the HRS rule. Sorry, my wireless doorbell is going off there. And you can get to the HRS through this tool here. And it's kind of nice. I'll show you how I use this HRS help button a little bit as we work through the demo that we're going to enter. So that's the QuickScore help. You got the user guide, you got the HRS rule, and then you have a link to Skidome if you need to get to Skidome. In addition to these two buttons, we also have the action toolbar. And the action toolbar has some pretty nice little functionalities to it there that allow you to create some different scenarios. It allows you to print some score sheets and share files with folks. You can access the calculator. That basically just opens up your Windows calculator. But I'll walk through the print function here. And you can print a blank score sheet in case you want to fill out the score sheet by hand, or if you want to include that score sheet in a best practice, you can click on the pathway that you want to print the score sheet for, and then click OK. And it will open that score sheet up as a rich text file within Microsoft Word for you. And you can come in here and then you can start, populating your site name, however you want to put that in there, where it's located, and save that file and have that to pass along to someone else. Or if you're including score sheets in the best practice, you can and do that with it as well. In addition to being able to print blank score sheets, you can also print a final score sheet. So for a site that you have entered, if you want to print a final score sheet for that, you just select the site that you want to print that for that you've already populated and click OK. And again, it will open that file up in an RTF format, and it has the information that you populated in that score sheet there for you. And you can attach this in an HRS package. You can use it if you're doing a PA or SI for that. It can be a deliverable in itself. You can also still edit the information in here if you want to as well, but it does use what you entered into QuickScore and prints that out for you. So that's the printing function and how you can get score sheets to folks. But if you actually want to get QuickScore files to people, then you can use the import-export function of QuickScore. And to export, you just click on export. You browse to the location you want to print that to. Click OK, and it will print your export files there. And I will show you those here if I can. So when you open that folder up, you'll see two XML files included in that. I like to recommend to folks, if you are going to be exporting a file, that you create a folder for each site that you're going to export to, because it does send these two files to that. And these are the two files that you would give to somebody that you want to share your QuickScore files with. So, if you need to do a deliverable of the QuickScore files themselves, you could export those, send those two XML files along to someone else. Or if you were getting a new computer and you want to save that data that you had in QuickScore, you can put those XML folders, those folders with the XML files on a LAN location or on a flash drive, and then you'd have those and be able to bring them into QuickScore when you got that installed on your new computer. So we just exported the files, and then to import the files, we use the import function, and then you browse to the folder where you've put those XML files. Select the folder, click OK, and then it brings that file right into QuickScore itself. So then you can see the files that have been shared with you, and you can describe how your coworkers can bring those files in to see QuickScore itself. We do have a save as function, and that allows you to save either as a site or a scenario. So Matt was also talking about how you could test to see, where you had data gaps. So if you have entered a site in and you want to kind of modify that site a little bit and do some changes to it to see what would happen to your site score if you couldn't document a fishery at the site, or if you weren't able to identify arsenic as being associated with a site. What would happen if you lose that substance or those targets? But you don't want to, you know, mess with the original site that you entered in. You can save as, and we just give it, you select the site that you want to save as, and you give it a different name, and it will show up here, and it will have all the data that you had entered in previously in the other site. And you can come in here, and then you can modify that and remove particular sources, remove targets, remove substances from that. So it's a nice way to be able to preserve your original site, but then go in and see what happens to your site scores. And then you can print score sheets for both of those and compare them. You can identify where you might need to go out and talk to some folks to identify that fishery better, to document it better, or where you might need to do sampling to find the arsenic that you're looking for, the most hazardous substance at your site. You can also save as a scenario, and that's basically the same thing, except that's just going to save it under the site. So you can have multiple scenarios associated with a site if you want. And this would be if you didn't want to keep it separate sites, you could just do that in there. And then now we have two different sites located under that, two different scenarios under that single site there. So that's the action toolbar. And I will take a quick pause right now to see if we have any questions about the introduction to QuickScore, about the home or the action toolbar. So feel free to give us some questions and we'll answer those right now.
All right. Thank you so much, Rebecca. I'll just remind the audience that Q&A space is available. If you don't have any questions, you can go ahead and even put that type of a message into the Q&A to let us know that you don't have any questions. While we're waiting to see if those come in, we did have a question just about the frequency with which QuickScore is updated.
Right. So it's been a little while since we have updated the actual QuickScore version. You see, the last major update we did was in 2020, and that's when we incorporated the subsurface intrusion component. So we try not to update it too frequently at this point in time, because we've worked out a lot of the kinks and a lot of the issues that were with the earlier versions, and have developed a new way for users to download those SCIDM values without having to download the whole application again. So the last update was in 2020. But we do compile suggestions and changes that people would like to see. And we will ask you guys, if you stick around to the very end, we'll ask you a polling question. You'll get an opportunity at that point in time to give us some suggestions or changes that you would like to see to QuickScore for us to update the next version of QuickScore. We have had some chats about maybe doing a web-based version instead of a downloaded version, since the technologies have changed quite a bit since we first started with this version 3.0 of QuickScore. So, but we don't update it too frequently. And if you do register with that notification number, we'll let you know when we do an update.
Okay. And then, does QuickScore work on Apple or Mac devices?
It does not work on Apple or Mac devices at this time. It's only for Windows-based computers. And that would be another good reason to move to a web-based version, or a suggestion that you could have to make it work with Apple and Mac.
Okay. Well, other than those two, I see a lot of people just confirming that they are following along and don't have any questions at this time. So I think you can carry on with the presentation.
Great. So those are some really good questions, and we do appreciate them. And we have gotten some of those Apple and Mac ones before, so definitely keep sending those questions in. If you guys would like to see that, you know, definitely put something in the Q&A, and we can make note of that there are a large base of our users out there that would prefer to have some Mac options. All right, so now we're going to create a site. And to do that, we kind of have a little document that we created that hopefully will be similar to some of the information you might have when you are entering a site into QuickScore, some of the data that you have, and to help you understand how to take that data that you have on the paper or in the document and put that into QuickScore. So we created a little mock site here. So I'll read through some of that, and we'll work on going between this document and then entering that into QuickScore. So we've received following information and been tasked to use QuickScore to calculate an HRS score and see if the site might qualify for listing on the MPL. This is an exercise just intended to highlight using the subsurface intrusion component and groundwater pathway to get a site score. It's not intended in any way as a substitute for HRS training or information and guidance provided by EPA headquarters and or regional MPL coordinators related to scoring a site for MPL purposes. All the information contained below is fictitious. So this is really just an exercise on how you might use the data to enter it into QuickScore. We haven't vetted it through a QA process or anything like that. It's really just a training exercise for you folks. That said, I did try to be as realistic as I could with the information that you might get, what you might see, and how we might interpret that to enter it into QuickScore. So we're going to pretend that these are excerpts that we have from a site reassessment report. In the introduction and purposes state that this LPQ auto parts facility is on the shore of Lake White. It was the main facility for the company that fabricated and distributed auto parts for race cars. It closed in the early 1990s. The former LPQ auto parts facility is now used as a location for a wholesale party store and headquarters for the Quick Step Party and Catering Company, which provides party planning and catering service for car racing and other sporting events. It employs 3 full-time staff and up to 12 part-time staff, each less than 20 hours per week. The part-time staff workers work almost exclusively off-site event locations. There's a mobile home park on the property. The state is concerned about a possible threat posed by the remaining solvent plume. So we're going to take this information and we're going to start putting it into QuickScore. What we're going to do is we're going to create a new site. And the first thing that we have to do before any of the rest of QuickScore is opened up is enter in a site name and a scenario name. And you can see that these are marked with that red asterisk, and that just means that it is a required field. So we entered in a site name and a scenario name. And the scenario name could be like if we were going to enter in multiple iterations of this, we could put something in there that would let us know, hey, this one is not using the surface water pathway. Or this scenario explores what would happen if we could get more target counts by going and sampling more properties. So that is all, I just typed that, made a spelling mistake there, but that's all we have to enter in to get QuickScore to open up for us. And then the rest of this on this page is optional. You can see when I did that, I get the source information tab and the pathway score sheet tab. So we'll do a quick scenario description here. And again, that's where you could put that more information about what you're actually doing for this scenario. We have an EPA ID, we can enter that in here. You don't have to, again, if you don't have one, or state ID, and you can enter in that city county information. Select our state, and if you select the state, then it will populate the EPA region for you. And we can put our congressional district if we know that. We have the latitude and longitude to enter, and that's another one of those fields that got kind of truncated as I was zooming in. So I was slipped down here, and you can see here's the latitude and longitude field that you would populate. And that's supposed to be entered in decimal degrees. For the majority of the United States, the latitude is going to be positive and the longitude is going to be negative. We do have a few territories where that is not the case, but if you are working with the continental US and Alaska and Hawaii, that will be the case. We are expecting a positive latitude and a negative longitude there. Right, we'll flip back over. And then you have the score purpose, and we have everything from a pre-circular screening to PASI all the way down to HRS package. So if you know the purpose that you're entering it, then you can put that there. And then the evaluator name. I do suggest that you put that in, and that might be helpful, especially if you're going to share these files with somebody else and they have questions, they know who to come back and talk to. So we do suggest that you do put your name in there, and then you can do your organization. And then the date, and the date, unfortunately, is another one of those things that got truncated there, but you can enter that date in. And if you are getting additional information and you can't remember if you entered that into QuickScore, sometimes looking at the date that's populated there might let you know if you did that, Or if you are doing multiple iterations of the same site, then you can come back and you can see which one was the most recent by looking at the date. So we suggest that you do at least the evaluator name and the date. So it kind of gives you an idea of when you entered that information and then who entered it in if you do pass it along to somebody else. So that is the site scenario portion of that and how you get started with entering a site into QuickScore. And then the next thing we're going to do is just going to go through these tabs. And the next tab is the source information. So if we click on that, and we'll go back to our document to see what we have here for that. And we do have some source information. It says we have manifest indicating that TCE was used on site and they were found on file. Soil samples delineating an area of 500 square feet revealed elevated levels of TCE and vinyl chloride in an area where TCE was known to be used. TCE and vinyl chloride are found in the groundwater, which has a shallow water table depth. There are no containment features in place at this contaminated soil. There is some evidence that the contamination is entering Lake White, but more sampling is needed. People do appear to fish at Lake White. All right, so we know we have some contaminated soil at our site, and you can give it a very specific name or you can give it a generic name. I'm going to give it a generic name right here. Just call it contaminated soil. And then we pick the source type, and that's from the HRS source types. We have a whole bunch of them in there, but for us, we know we are using contaminated soil, so we'll pick that. We also know that we have 500 square feet. And that is what we will enter in here in our hazardous waste quantity. Then QuickScore will calculate the source hazardous waste quantity value. So it's dividing that 500 by the appropriate divisor that's in HRS table 2-5. All right, so next we're doing step three. And step three is really about containment at the source. So what substances in the source are capable of migrating to which of the following pathways? We know we have contamination in the groundwater pathway, and we know we don't really have any containment. There's no liners, there's no covers, there's no leachate collection systems. There's nothing like that at this source that we can see from the information we have. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to check that groundwater box. And the next thing we're going to do is associate what the substances to the source. And to do that, we click on this button. And that opens up this table here. And this is all the substances that are in Skidome. And we have their toxicity values, ecotoxicity, the groundwater mobility, our gas mobility and migration values, persistence, bioaccumulation, and that degradation value. And the substances are listed in alphabetical order. And we know we have vinyl chloride. So I'll just zoom down here to the bottom. I'll highlight vinyl chloride and then I'll click this blue arrow. And that associates the substance with our source. We also know that we have TCE, so you can use this drop down here and you can start typing and it will take you to that alphabetically in the list, and we can select TCE. And again, it'll highlight it and we click that blue arrow and it brings it over. One of the more recent updates again to QuickScore was a user-defined substance. So this allows you to enter in a substance that either may not be in Skidome, or maybe you know that Skidome was just updated and we haven't got that table ready for you to import into QuickScore yet, but you want to go ahead and you want to use that substance to score the site, but you know that the toxicity has changed. And that gives you the opportunity to enter that in here. And we can say, let's say that we know that TCE had a new toxicity value. We type that in here. And then we could populate it with all the different values that we knew to be the case for the site. We click save below, and then it saves that substance for us. The CAS number will always be user defined, and it will always have that parentheses and UD around the name of the substance. So you know that you're using a substance that was user defined versus a substance that came from Skidome. So that's how you use the user-defined tool in the Skidome tables. And it's kind of a neat function to use, especially if there's a substance that's not in Skidome. It allows you to use that pretty easily. And if you do know about the update there. So to add those to our source, we click add substances in there. We are back on our source. But I did not mean to put that user-defined TCE with my source. So in order to remove that, how do I get it out of here? It doesn't Doesn't seem to be a way to do that there. It's pretty easy. You just got to click on the associate substance button again, go back to this page. We'll highlight that substance we want to remove. And then there's a remove substance, remove from list down here. We click that, but we do have to click that add substances again, and our user defined TCE values is no longer associated with our source at this point. You can add as many sources as you want. If we had another source, we go ahead and click add a new source and go through that whole process again, through step one, step two, step three, and step four. Step five allows you to have some of the source information be associated with the soil exposure component. We're not going to walk through the soil exposure component for this. If you check that, it basically brings over the name and the source type. You still then have to enter the hazardous waste quantity value and the substances for the AOC, because there's slightly different requirements for a source in an AOC and area of contamination. For the area of contamination, you do have to have some sampling. You have to remove those impervious areas from your area calculation. And it has to just consider that top 2 feet of soil. And again, the substances may be slightly different in the source and in the AOC, so you do have to enter those again. So that's the source information. Now let's move over to the pathways. When you first come to this pathway score sheet, you can use this as a calculator to give you the site score. So it'll run through that root mean square equation for the site score of the HRS to get that. So if we thought we could get 100 for the groundwater migration pathway, we could click that. And we can see that would give us a site score of 50. In order to list a site to the NPL, you need to have an HRS score of 28.50 or greater. So that would work, but if we weren't quite confident and we could only get a 50 there, oh, that drops us down below that 28.50, but we are scoring the soil exposure subsurface intrusion pathway as well. What if we could get 25 in that pathway? It's 27.95, that's still below the 28.50. We can kind of tinker to see what sort of site score, what pathway scores we might need to boost that site score above 28.50. Once you do enter the pathway specific score sheets, it locks down your ability to be able to edit those values there. So you can't no longer come in and use it as a calculator, except when you first come to this and you haven't entered anything for those other pathways. But it's kind of nice to have that little calculator there. So we'll start out with the groundwater score sheet. And let's hop back over here to our document and see what kind of information we have about the groundwater. So here are some observations and results from the groundwater. We have several nearby homes that have private wells that use the groundwater from the unconsolidated sand and gravel aquifer for drinking purposes. All right, we have a monitoring well 2 miles up gradient of groundwater flow that was non-detect for TCE and vinyl chloride. Samples of groundwater from a private well have shown an observed release of vinyl chloride to the unconsolidated sand and gravel aquifer. Okay, we'll stop right there and we'll go back to quick score. Again, we have that red asterisk, so we do need to enter in an aquifer name before we can start entering anything else into our groundwater pathway. We'll call this sand and gravel. And once we do that, then we have the rest of this opened up for us to start entering information. Now we know we got an observed release based on the data that we have. So we can select that. If we didn't have an observed release, we would drop down here to this potential to release, and then we would fill out these parameters based on containment, net precipitation, depth, aquifer, and travel time associated with the site. And it would calculate that potential to release for us and then assign the highest value of the observed release, or if we didn't do that, the potential to release, and that would be our likelihood of release. We can step on and do our waste characteristics. So we need to assign our toxicity mobility to the groundwater pathway. To do that, we click on that button and that opens up our assigned mobility sheet. And I think we had an observed release, observed release of vinyl chloride. So we click on observed release of that. We don't have any documentation for an observed release of TCE, but it is a liquid. And we know that we're dealing with a non-karst aquifer because we have a sand and gravel, and that's typically not what you would see for a karst aquifer. So we check on the liquid non-karst, and that assigns our toxicity mobility value to those substances. We click save and return. And then we can see that it's using vinyl chloride to calculate our waste characteristics value for the pathway. Now let's, we'll start entering some target information, but to do that, we'll hop back over here and get some of this target information. All right, so the concentration of vinyl chloride was 4.5 micrograms per liter. The benchmark for vinyl chloride is 2 micrograms per liter, and these benchmark values are included in SCIDM. So that's where the benchmark values are coming from. 4 people reside at this home. Samples of groundwater from a private well PW2 have shown an observed release of vinyl chloride with a concentration of 1.9 micrograms per liter. 3 people live at this home. So that 1.9 is below our benchmark of 2 micrograms per liter. I did a quick little table here for us to kind of fill out to show how we're going to get those targets, that population, into QuickScore. So we had level 1 contamination at well PW1 because we have that observed release, and then we have the concentrations that are above the benchmark for vinyl chloride. So we have level 1 here, and we have 4 people who reside at that house. So that population we're going to enter is going to be 4 for that. For PW2, we had an observed release, but we were not above the benchmark. So that's only level 2 contamination. And we had 3 people that live there. So we have 3 folks that are going to be subjected to level 2 contamination at that house. All right. So we have an additional 11 private wells, PW3 through PW13, within a quarter mile of the site, and 4 private wells, PW14 through PW17, within a half a mile of the site. All wells are in the unconsolidated sand and gravel aquifer. According to the 2020 census report, the county has an average of 2 people per household. These wells were not sampled. So these can't be level 1 or level 2 contamination, but they can be potential because they're in the aquifer and they're within 4 miles of the site. All right, so we have 11 wells and we have that county multiplier of 2. So we have 11 times 2, and that gives us 22 people there. And the other one, we have 4. And again, we have that multiplier of 2 for the county, and that gives us 8. All right, I'm going to go through one of my more favorite features of QuickScore right now to walk through this. So in QuickScore, I'm sure you guys have noticed that we have some blue font in here. If I hover over top of that blue font, it is a hyperlink. So to do the potential contamination, we do have to use that distance weighted population table 312. We click on that, it takes us right to table 312. So when I am doing QA, in addition to sometimes seeing what might happen to the score, if we lost a particular group of targets or a particular substance to see you know, how that's going to impact the site score, I will also use it sometimes to get myself to the right section of the HRS so I don't have to flip through my paper copy or I don't have to go online and search through the PDF to get to that table. I can come in here and I can click that link and it will take me right to the table. So that's a really handy dandy feature for me that I do use quite frequently in QuickScore in doing both QAs and technical assistance. Hopefully that'll be useful to you guys as well. Some people I know might have specific things memorized, but this distance table is not one of those things that I have memorized. And there are a few other sections where I definitely need to refer back to the HRS and make sure that I have remembered it correctly. So for the potential there in that 0 to 1/4 mile, and we are looking at other than karst because we have a sand and gravel and not a limestone aquifer there. We had 19 folks, and we're going to look here and we say 11 to 30. So that's going to mean that we put a value of 17 for our population there. And this is just because we have potential contamination. We don't know if these people are being subjected to it. We think they might be. So instead of giving the full value of 22, we use this table to kind of dilute that value a little bit and make it more realistic to what might be happening. And then we have 8 in that 1/4 mile to 1/2 mile. And you see that's going to result in a 2 there. 2M. And that's going to be 19 for our potential population. So we can enter this then into QuickScore. We had 4 for our level 1. And when we enter that, it's going to multiply that by that multiplier of 10 for that population. We had 3 for our level 2. And then we had 19 for our potential. And then again, it's going to multiply it by that dilution factor value of 0.1 per the HRS for us and give us that value. We also do need to assign our nearest well value, and we can go back to the HRS here and take a look at that. I'll just zoom up. So that's table 311 for that. And it says level 1 concentrations, we do get a 50. See what that footnote says? It says distance does not apply. So we can assign a 50 for our nearest well population. And that gives us our groundwater migration pathway score. We don't have any resources per the information we have or wellhead protection area. So our groundwater pathway is giving us a score of 20.24. You can see that that changed our site score over here, and now we can't get in here and type in anything for the groundwater pathway. So now we'll go over to the surface water, and we'll see what kind of information we have for the surface water pathway in our document. Okay, we don't have any specific observations for that, it looks like. So let's go back up here to the beginning. And it says there's some evidence that the contamination is entering Lake White, but more sampling is needed. People appear to fish in Lake White. So let's go ahead for our purposes and enter in an example for Lake White. But we would need to go back out and do some more confirmation sampling and talk to some folks and document that fishery a little bit better. We'll just think that we can get an observe release here. And if we couldn't, then we would do that potential to release. So the surface water pathway is divided into the surface water overland flow. And then we also have the groundwater to surface water. And that's how you access each of these here. The sheets that you enter information in is extremely similar. The groundwater surface water just brings in some of that mobility portions for the groundwater portion there in that. So we'll walk through the surface water overland flow portion. Again, if you didn't have the observe release and you knew you could do the potential to release, you would use these dropdowns to populate that. And you could click on these hyperlinks to take you to that specific section of the HRS to figure out what you should be entering in there. We have 3 threats in the surface water pathway. We have the drinking water threat, the human food chain threat, and the environmental threat. And those are all in these 3 tabs down here. And you can tell which tab you're in based on the blue highlight. And we don't have any mention of drinking water or environmental targets for the surface water pathway in our document, but we do think we might have a potential fishery. So that's going to be human food chain. So we'll go to that tab. And the first step, we'll assign our persistence bioaccumulation. But we don't have any substances in here. How do we get our substances associated with this pathway? This is a frequent question I do get to the helpline on why they don't have any substances. And if you remember back here on our source page, we have this step 3, and it lets us know which substances can migrate to which source. So if we check this surface water box right here, and then we hop back over to the surface water score sheets, our substances magically appear there. So I like getting questions like that are super easy fixes, and we can help people right away. So to assign our predominant water body, our persistence, we know we're dealing with a lake. It's Lake White, and it is a fresh water body. We'll do the same thing here for vinyl chloride. And we save and return, and then we can see that it's using TCE to assign our persistence and bioaccumulation to our site. It's calculated out our waste characteristics for us there of 18. Now we'll move on to food chain individual. We don't have a level 1 fishery, but we might be able to get that level 2 fishery if we do some sampling. So we'll go ahead and assign a level 2 fishery. Again, we don't have any level 1 concentrations, and for level 2 concentrations, let's take a look at table 418 and see what we're supposed to do here. There we go. seem to have pressed my luck with all the windows that I have open and am flipping back and forth. Let me just shut QuickScore here and then I will reopen it and close some of these Word documents that I don't need anymore to free up some of my bandwidth. All right, there we go. We'll reopen QuickScore and hop back into the surface water pathway. All right, and we're going to do the human food chain threat, and we're going to do our level 2 concentrations using table 418. All right, so we don't know how many people fish and how many pounds of fish they catch from Lake White. We do know it's greater than 0. It's probably not going to be more than 100 if it's just recreational fisheries there where people are catching and taking those home. So let's do the safe bet and we'll go with 0.03 for our level 2 targets. And that is it for our surface water pathway. If we decided that we didn't want this included in our score sheet, the real quick and easy way to get it out would just be to bring that value back to 0 because it's one of the multipliers in the pathway score. And if you give it a 0, then the whole pathway score is going to be 0. So if you wanted to get rid of it, that's a quick and easy way to get rid of it, to be able to bring it back. Alternatively, you could delete the whole watershed. But then if you do decide that you want to score based on that, then you would need to come back in and re-enter all the information again. Another way you could be would be to remove that checkbox on step 3 there, and that would remove your substances, and that would also remove your score for the surface water pathway. I think we'll take a quick break here to do the next couple of polls.
All right, so Rebecca, I'm going to go ahead and launch 2 polls right now. And there are 2 questions that have shown up on the screen. So for our participants, you may need to scroll up and down so that you can answer both questions. But the first question in the pop-up will ask, what is the minimum HRS score that makes a site eligible to be proposed to the NPL? You'll have 4 choices. You can pick 100, greater than or equal to 28.5, 75, or 3.14. And then our second question, how do you update Skidum in QuickScore? Is it the first option? It is not possible. Should you click on the Update Skidum Values button on the QuickScore home screen? Should you manually enter the updated values or should you call the helpline? Once you've entered your 2 selections for those 2 questions, again, you pick 1 option per question and then hit the submit button at the bottom. We will take a quick pause here to talk about the correct responses. About 2/3 of you have responded. It is more fun when more of you respond. So I will encourage to ask those of you who can to go ahead and share your thoughts. There's no penalty for a wrong answer, so take your best guess. If you're having any problems with those poll questions, you can simply type your responses into the Q&A if that's easier for you to participate. And if you're unsure, you can even put that in the Q&A. And I'm now looking at almost 72% of the audience having voted. If anybody's having a hard time reading the full extent of the options of the polls, if you hover over any one of the options, it'll give you a pop-up that gives you the full discrete response, or you can simply make the poll window wider. That window is resizable in Zoom. Okay, Rebecca, I think right now we've got about 3/4 of the answers having come in. I'm going to close the polls here in 3, 2, 1. And let's talk about those results. So for our first question, what is the minimum HRS score that makes a site eligible to be proposed to the NPL? 94% of the audience picked greater than or equal to 28.5. Are they right?
They are right. Good job, guys. That is the site score needed to list a site to the NPL. Kind of sad nobody picked pie, but I am glad that a lot of you guys got the right answer there. I tried to say that multiple times when we're on that one sheet there to kind of drive that one home. That's the magic number that you need to remember, 28.50.
Excellent. And then our next question, how do you update Skidum in QuickScore? Almost as many people, this time 92% of them picked the second option. Click on the Update Skidum Values button on the QuickScore home screen.
And that is the correct option, but I will also accept call the helpline. We definitely will be there and willing to help walk you through how to update those values, especially if that button's not working. So it's almost correct too. You can manually enter those into the user-defined values, but that's going to take a lot of work for you, and we don't want you to have to go through that process. So click on that button on the home screen or give us a call, and we can help you get those updated SCIM values in there. Also, additionally, I will say if you have a substance that you want to use that's not in SCIM, give us a call or email at the helpline too, and we can help you get some of that information that you need to enter it in, some of those toxicity values and other things. We have some folks that can help you do that there at EPA, and they will be happy to get the information to you so you can use that substance to score your site. And I do thank you all for participating in that poll. It kind of breaks it up a little bit. It helps me know if I've been hitting on the right things and kind of driving some of those points home. It's very good for me to know where I might need to make slight adjustments to what we're presenting so you guys know how to use it. And if we were in person, I would totally be giving you candy bars or something for the right answer. So maybe someday soon we can all have another in-person training of QuickScore, and we can have some of those candy bars. I think we also give that out for the person who's been doing site assessment for the longest too. And then we do have some treats for those folks who are just new to it, because I know that this can be so much information that we're kind of giving to you and walking through super quickly. Our main goal for today is to just expose you to QuickScore a little bit, let you see it, think about how you might use some of the information you have to get a site into QuickScore, and really point out that you can give us a call or an email at any time, and we'll be happy to help you walk through any issues or concerns you're having with that. We are more geared towards the technical components of QuickScore, but we can provide some HRS assistance if I know that I can direct you to a section or a table in the HRS, as well as the HRS guidance manual. I will do that, and then we can put you in touch with the appropriate people at EPA for those more specific HRS questions as well. And I do apologize to those of you who have never used QuickScore or are used to the site assessment process, because we aren't going too in depth into the HRS itself. We're kind of just leaving that at the surface and talking a little bit about where you get that information. So we do assume that you have a slight understanding of the HRS, but I do realize that that might not be the case for some of you. So hang in there and do some of the other trainings that are going to be coming up that'll help with the HRS. And seeing these screens and having the repetition of it will be useful for you at some point in the future, I hope. So we'll jump into the soil exposure subsurface intrusion pathway of the QuickScore application. And this is one of the updates that was made in 2020 as well. We added that subsurface intrusion component. As you guys know, that was just added to the HRS. So that was the last update that we made to SCIM here. I mean, sorry, to QuickScore. So we have the soil exposure components. We won't walk through that, but it's set up just like the other pathways. You have that likelihood of exposure. You have your targets. Here's your potential for exposure and targets in that one. To do the soil exposure pathway, you do have to enter in an AOC or area of contamination. And that's the equivalent of a source kind of in the soil exposure pathway to the sources and all the other migration pathways. And it's set up just like that source section, and you'll associate your substance, you'll give it a hazardous waste quantity, and then you'll go back to your soil exposure pathway. And then you'll be able to pull from that AOC to get your score there. Since the subsurface intrusion component is the newer one, we are going to walk through that today. So we'll hop here and go back to our document that has the subsurface intrusion in it. All right, so our contaminants concerned here are PCE, TCE, and vinyl chloride. We have indoor air exposures of PCE, TCE recorded in the mobile home park owner's home and the quick step party and catering structure. Three people live in the mobile home park owner's home. So you have three people living there with an observed exposure. Levels of PCE and TCE are above the current HRS cancer risk and non-cancer effects levels at the mobile home park owner's home, and above the cancer risk level for PCE and the quick step party and catering structure. So that means we have level one contaminations for both the park owner's home and the catering company. Soil gas borings depths around the mobile home park were between 6 and 9 feet deep and recorded observed releases of vinyl chloride. So we have some sampling around the mobile home park. They're less than 10 feet deep, and we have observed releases of vinyl chloride there. We have some information about those mobile homes that are within the park and structures there. And that's what we're going to use to kind of populate the table that we have down below. Since this is a quicker webinar that we're doing versus our normal 4-hour training, I have gone ahead and I've populated some of the information down here in red. Typically, what we would do would we hand out this document to you guys and let you walk through it yourselves and enter it in the quick score. And then we would go through it together to see how we did, where we differed, and why we might have some different values in there. So the red is kind of what I went ahead and pre-populated, so you guys didn't have to watch me do a bunch of math and calculations, but we will walk through a few of these so you can kind of get the idea, and then we'll enter the end results into QuickScore. So we have square feet for our mobile home park owner's home, and the HRS does allow us to calculate volume. And it says to assume a ceiling height of 8 feet if we don't know. So we can take this 2,900 that we have there and multiply that by 8 to figure out the volume of that home. And that's 23,200 square feet. But we need our volume to be in cubic yards. So we'll divide that by 27 to get our cubic yards. That's 859.25. I already forgot my number. I think I did that wrong. 0.25. Okay. Now we'll hop back over to QuickScore real quick, and we'll do some things here. We have an observed exposure. We know that. The subsurface intrusion is very similar to the soil exposure in that we have an AOE, or area of observed exposure. And we have ASC, area of subsurface contamination. And we need to enter that in because this page here pulls from that. So now we'll hop right over here and we'll call this the owner home. And now we're allowed then to enter the rest of the information in. And let's see, I don't remember the divisor for the hazardous waste quantity. So if I click on that, I come here, and that's also where it tells us to use that, that 8 feet. Right here. Calculate the volume of each regularly occupied structure on actual data. If unknown, use a ceiling height of 8 feet. So that's where we get that from the HRS. We also have this table down here that shows us our divisor. So we're doing volume of a regularly occupied structure that has an observed exposure. So we're going to divide that volume value in cubic yards by 2.5. That's going to give us a hazardous waste quantity value of 3.43.70. All right. And we know we have 3 people that live there and they're subject to level 1. So we're going to go ahead and put our population there of 3. And we'll go back and we'll enter in our hazardous waste quantity value, and we'll associate our substance as well. And here we have PCE and PCE. So we'll scroll down. And move those substances over. All right. We have another AOE, so we're going to add a new one here, and this is going to be the catering company. Let's go back, and I already calculated that out by using our 8 and then dividing by 27 and dividing by that 2.5, and we have a hazardous waste quantity value of 948.14. And we have the same substances here, so we'll go ahead and grab those. And this is just like we did in the source section with highlighting those and then clicking the blue arrow. And if we want to use user-defined substances, we could do that as well here. Now we have our AOEs entered. We do have an ASC in this case. It's the mobile park homes. So we'll enter that in as our ASC. And I already did the hazardous waste quantity value for that one as well. It's 1,414.88. And I think our hazardous substances associated with it are slightly different for that. So we had vinyl chloride in our gas borings around this mobile home park. So we'll associate that substance here. And this is one of those where you can kind of connect dots around to create either your AOE or your ASC if you have enough sampling for that, and include the homes inside there for your target values. Right, so we have our AOE and our ASC information entered. We'll go back to our score sheet page. We need to assign our degradation value, and that's super similar to what we're doing for mobility and our persistence by accumulation. We have these substances in here multiple times because we associated them with multiple AOEs and ASCs. We just need to highlight them once, though, and click the option over here on the right. And for vinyl chloride, that wasn't in an observed exposure, but it was in a sample that was less than 10 feet. So we would pick the most appropriate one over here based on the information we have. And for it, it's less than 10 feet. We save and return, and then we'll see which substance it's using to assign degradation based on the highest toxicity degradation value. We got our hazardous waste quantity and our waste characteristics. Then we'll go to entering in our targets. And we know we have some level one targets. So that means that we're going to get that 50 for our exposed individual. And we'll come back to our sheet here. We have workers. So in the beginning, we talked about how we had 3 full-time workers. And then we had, I think it was 6 part-time workers. Those part-time workers, though, they never really worked on site. They were always at events off site. They may occasionally come in to maybe pick up a paycheck or a piece of equipment or something like that, but they were rarely on there. So for our purposes, I'm going to say that we don't count them since they're not really being exposed to the indoor air at that catering facility. Now, if they did work on site most of the time for their part-time, then we would include them. But since they're not, it's kind of a unique case where it's a catering company and they do have more employees than what actually works on site. I think it's okay for us to exclude those part-time workers in this case. And for workers, when you have them, you divide your full-time workers by 3. So we have 3 full-time workers. So we're going to divide that value by 3, and that's going to give us a 1. And we're going to have a total population for level 1 targets are going to be 4. So we'll come back and we'll populate that there. And that discussion on about how to assign workers is included in the HRS. So we'll type in 4 there. We don't have any level 2 targets, but we do have some potential targets. And I started to populate some of this table for us where we had the multiplier that comes from table 5.2. And that multiplier is based on the information that's located here about those structures. So these are our potential targets. And we don't know what if they're actually being exposed or not, because we don't have that indoor air sample like we do from the owner's home and the store where we actually have indoor air. We know that it's in there. It's what they're breathing. These are from some crawl spaces, or it's from samples that surround the park homes. So they might be getting it based on what's in the soil gas there, but we're not real sure if it's actually making it into the air. So we assign a multiplier there to kind of reduce those targets from what you would assign to a level 1 or a level 2. So for MH1, it says it's semi-enclosed. So let's go to table 521 and see what that says. Oh, it's not going to open for me again, I believe. shut that down and come back. All right, and we are in the subsurface intrusion, and we want to use table 521. So table 521 talks about the structures and how they are built. And we know that MH1, it was a semi-enclosed crawl space and it had observed release criteria. So we're going to assign a population weighting value of 0.9 to the folks in that structure. So we'll come back in here. And that's a 0.9. And we have two people. So, let's say 2 times 0.9. That means we get 1.8 target points for that one. And I've done that for all the others. The information that you need is right here, and it's associated with the samples here that allow you to figure out from that table 521 what you should be multiplying your populations by. And I can see that my total population all summed up to 9.5. So we'll enter that into QuickScore. And we don't have any resources. So that is our soil exposure subsurface intrusion pathway score, 21.22. I'll hop over to the air score sheet. We're not going to walk through an exercise there. Historically, I haven't seen a lot of air migration pathways come through when I've been doing QA. In fact, I've been doing it for 20 years, and just recently I had the first air pathway site come through for me to do a QA on. So I haven't seen a whole lot of them. We typically tend to see more groundwater and surface water, and then soil exposure. And now the subsurface intrusion one is becoming a little bit more popular as well for that indoor air. Don't see a whole lot of air, but I know that there have been some listed to the NPL, and it might be coming a thing that might creep up in popularity as well. So again, you do that observe release section here with your 550 or zero, your potential to release. You're going to assign mobility, and that will be where you checked, your values there in step 3 for the air pathway. And then you'll do your targets just the same and your resources as well. For this one, the sensitive environments can only contribute 60 points. So if you enter in a value that's higher than 60, you'll get an error message. So it's set up to warn you about some of those things in the HRS that you might not remember if you don't do the pathway frequently of, oh, I can only have 60 target points there for the sensitive environments. It will give you a reminder. And once you get that value down so that it's contributing less than 60 to the overall pathway score, it'll let you move forward with that. So I think now we'll do a quick Q&A if we have anything there since I've walked through. Oh, wait, I forgot one of the things that I definitely wanted to mention, and that's the pencil before we start into a Q&A. So be thinking about your questions as I'm talking about this. So guys, I've seen the pencil icon. It's on every screen in here, and it allows you to enter scratchpad notes. So if you have references for particular information that you have in a particular pathway, you can do that here. Or if there are notes that you want to remember or things you want to go back and check. So you can even associate it with a score sheet line. So if you had some information about the observed exposure, and you can say, maybe you had the sample numbers that you wanted to use for that. And then you can document where that was from, if that's from, and you can do as many notes in here as you want. And if you are in the soil exposure pathway and you decided you want to enter in something about the source, you can use the drop down and do that as well. You say hazardous waste quantity based on measurements. And you can add those notes, just whatever you want, even if it's about, we weren't sure about our fishery, right? So we could put a little note with the fishery there. And this will populate based on what page you're in. But if you all of a sudden you get to the end and you're like, yeah, I meant to enter something about the hazardous waste quantity, you can click the pencil icon anywhere and do that. We say get better fishery reference. And then that's associated with the site. And you can print those out by doing the final score sheets and clicking that button there, and then it will add the Scratchpad notes to the end of your score sheet. So that might be helpful if you are doing a PA or you're in the TA process, and lots of times you don't have that documentation that you have for the official HRS package. You can do that to kind of pass along. So whoever's looking at the score sheets for that site that's not quite ready for the MPL or the HRS, and you can see like, oh, so these are the assumptions that they're making that they'll be able to do. This is where some weaknesses might exist. And you can just have that documentation. And then when you do move into the more formal HRS package, it might also be useful for you to know, like, you know, what references you're going to cite for particular sections of that HRS documentation record. So that is officially all I have to say about QuickScore. And we will do a couple more polls and we'll open it up for some Q&A. So I think we'll do some Q&A here first, and then maybe we'll do some polls after we do that.
Okay. All right. So Rebecca, I'm going to start with some questions that came in earlier. And this first one asks about when they're entering lat and long, how many decimal places do they need to enter?
I think what I would say is enter as many as you have. So if it's a real rough estimate and you only have like the whole number there, then just enter the latitude and longitude without any decimal places. If you have it carried out to the sixth or the eighth place with that level of accuracy, then go ahead and include that as well. I think what they might be requiring for SIMS is six places for the most accurate there. So whatever you have, enter that in for QuickScore.
Okay. And for the substances that you're entering into QuickScore, do you only enter substances that have been confirmed present or known to be used, but you haven't necessarily sampled for them yet?
Oh, that's a really good question. And that might be the instance where you could use some of those save as and do some various scenarios there. So if you wanted to know, If you've known they've been known to be used at a source, the guidance is typically that you can associate them with that source. Where that differs is when we were talking about the AOC, you actually have to have sampling confirmation for the AOC there. But, you know, you can enter those substances in that have known to be used, but without confirmation sampling. And then you could also do a scenario where you don't have those substances in and see how it might impact your score. And then it could be a discussion between you and EPA on whether you need to do some sampling to confirm that those substances are present. If you have manifest and things that are very, you know, legally binding in nature, then sampling might not be necessary. Or if you have observed releases of particular substances, and in our case, you know, we're looking at an auto place where we know that they typically use certain substances, and we actually had a manifest saying that they use some of the substances there. So we might not need sampling there to use TCE, especially since we had some observed releases of that. So it's really going to depend on a site-by-site basis, but there's some things you can do to see what might happen to your site score if you don't have some of those substances, and it might not impact the site score depending on this actual substance.
Okay. Our next question was about the LPQ data. Where did you find the LPQ data from so that you could then find the information to fill out HRS?
That is a really good question. So if you, I will exit out of this and show QuickScore. We do have, when you download QuickScore the first time, you're going to have an LPQ auto parts, and then the LPQ SSI will be included in your download. So we have a couple of pre-populated sites included in QuickScore for you. What I just walked through, if you have done the QuickScore training recently at a site assessment conference, you do have this information. I think I will have to okay it with Matt and a couple other folks, but we can probably provide you this worksheet here if you would like that to work through on your own. And then you can kind of see, I can put at the end some what we got for various pathway scores, and you could check your work against that. If people would be interested in that, just drop a note in the Q&A box for that, and we will check with EPA and see if we can get that to you so you could work on doing a site on your own.
Okay. And similar question about finding information, but this time about determining what is considered level 1 or level 2. Where would they find that information?
Okay, so I will give you a very high level overview of that. So level one and level two are based on samples that you have at your site. So you would likely get some sampling information, and we had some of that information here associated with it. And for the groundwater, we had an observe release. So in order to have an observe release, you have to have attribution, and you have to have samples that are three times above background levels for your site. And then that gives you automatically a level two. To get a level one contamination for your targets, then your substance, and here we had vinyl chloride, and we said that we had 4.5 micrograms per liter. We had that benchmark for vinyl chloride, and it was 2 micrograms per liter. So since 4.5 is greater than two, it's above that health-based benchmark, then we get a level two target. And that 2 micrograms per liter came from the Skidham tables. And I can probably go there. And that you hit Skidham from their website, and you can put your substance in, and it will pull back. If you go to the query page, it will pull back the toxicity values, those mobility values, and it will give you the health-based benchmarks as well. So type in vinyl chloride, and then we come down here, and we just check what we want values for. And this benchmark one is the one that will give you that level one versus level two. You'll see that there. So it'll bring back a PDF. And if you have done HRS packages, you know that you have to include this these Skidham pages as part of your package. And right here is that the benchmark. So your substances, your samples would need to be above one of these, just one of these benchmarks for vinyl chloride. We do have some substances that don't have benchmarks, so then you can only ever get a level two for those substances. But Skidham is where you go to find that information.
All right, excellent. We have a question here asking, how do you manage multiple aquifers and limited information on those multiple aquifers if they're connected?
So you can't enter multiple aquifers here in that you can add new aquifers, and you can do the same thing with watersheds for the surface water pathway as well. If they're not interconnected, then you can get the score here, and you would probably want to look at the score to see which one was giving you the highest score, and then you would check this button and say, you know, only evaluate this aquifer in the score. Or maybe if you did have an aquifer with a higher score, but you weren't quite confident in the data that you gathered for it, you know, you could pick another aquifer to do that. If they are interconnected, my suggestion for entering them in would be to count them as a single aquifer here, and enter them that way. If they're not interconnected, then you're going to use this button here.
Okay. I have a question here about the requirements. They want to know, are there requirements to include the site information that gets you the quick score assigned values in the corresponding reports, for example, a PA or SI? They note that it's difficult to view. Sorry, it just moves on here for me. It can be difficult to view some of these reports without that site-specific information.
So, I guess I need a little clarification on that. Is they're asking for more information to be recorded for the site, or they want to know how they can get this information?
Okay, so for the person who submitted that question, their clarification is it's difficult to review site-specific HRS score sheets without this information included. So if the person who submitted the question is willing to share some additional information in another submission, we'll come back to that one. Does that work for you, Rebecca?
Yeah, I can just real quickly though, maybe this might answer that. So all the stuff that is on that site page, the first page in QuickScore there, it is printed out right here. So it has my site name, my scenario name, whatever I entered then will be in here. I didn't put in the latitude and longitude, but that would be here in my congressional district. And I picked other for that type. So if I was doing a PA, I would pick PA. And then that scenario description is included in here in that description part where I was talking about some of those different parameters that we could do. And let me print out with the, and then another thing you can also do, we talked about that scratch pad, and that will be included at the end of the score sheet. And that might have some information, like I was saying, where you aren't 100% sure what you can get, for that particular data element, but you want to see what the site score is anyway, or you have some questions you need to go back. So the scratch pad is printed out, and it will be kind of assembled in a way that matches up with, like, the pathway sources. It tells you kind of what pathway you're looking at. And this one is a note that we put in for the source. And then when we put in a note for the surface water overland flow for the human food chain, it kind of gives us those clarification points there. So I don't know if that answers their question about getting some of the data elements that you need more information for at that PA level into somebody else's hands. You can print those scratch pad, and then that site information is here in this first section.
All right, excellent. If I see some supplemental information from that person, I'll come back to it.
Yeah, and please, if you want to reach out to the helpline with more specifics, because you just can't explain it in the chat box, please feel free to give us a call or send us an email. And we'll take note of your suggestion, or see if we can figure out a way to help you get that information to make it easier for whoever's reviewing.
Okay. And we did see some people asking questions about those pencil notes. I think this came in as you were showing people how to print them out or mark them to be printed. We did have some feedback from other users how incredibly useful printing those notes are, but that it doesn't print them out by default, that you have to do something to make sure the scratch pad notes print out. So maybe you could go back over that demo one more time just to show them how to print out those notes.
Yep. So they're only available in the final score sheets, not on the blank score sheets. And then you select the site that you want to print, and then just check that scratch pad note thing as well. And then it'll include it. You'll have to scroll down. It's a little bit clunky. This is one of the things that I always wanted to kind of work on for the score sheets, but it'll have all my score sheets there that I've done. And then we get a page here. Then it says scratch pad notes. And we keep scrolling, and then we'll have, each section that is in QuickScore that you can have a note for is listed with the ones that you put in and just populate it. So you can do some editing and delete a lot of those blank pages and those sections that you don't need, and kind of do some formatting. I wish that the formatting was a little bit better on the scratch pad, but we haven't been able to kind of update that portion of it yet. But at least it's there, and you can get it out, and you can document it. And when you share those export import files with folks, it is included with that as well.
Okay. And then we had another question or more observation from one of the users. I think they watched the program seem to sort of freeze up on you, that required you to need to close it and then reopen it. And they were just wondering if that is an indicator that perhaps they should be doing an update, or is anybody else, encountering that same problem, that they frequently need to shut down and come back. So they're just wondering if that's a tech issue on their end, or it sort of happens to everyone because it was happening to you during the session today.
I have had that happen to me when I've not been presenting, but lots of times in doing this through a webinar, I will have things slowed down for me. And especially when other things are utilizing the Java applet, which this also does. And the particular reason why it was happening to me now had everything to do with the help button and me hopping through the different sections of the HRS as much as I did during this presentation. Sometimes that will cause it to freeze up when it can't keep up with me and skipping through those different sections of the HRS. This is kind of, the developers have let me know that this is an older way of doing things. So it opens up this HTML in an actual Java reader within QuickScore. So it's a little bit clunky. But at the time QuickScore was first moved into the 3.0 platform, it was a lot better to do this versus using your regular browser, because you'll get some error messages with that. And sometimes Companies don't always let programs like this communicate with your browsers. They kind of see that as a security threat to the browsing application. So that was one of the workarounds we found that could probably have a little bit more elegant solution to it. But closing QuickScore and coming back will cancel out that request that it's trying to process that it can't and coming back in. I don't normally have as many problems as I had today. I walked through this presentation like 3 or 4 times before I gave it to you guys, and I never had it freeze up on me during the whole time that I was practicing for it. It's just, you know, one of those things that seems to happen when you do live presentations. It was also competing with the need for me to restart my computer today. I had one of those restart or snoozes as we started into this today. So I had a lot going on my computer. So, but yeah, definitely thank you for that, that comment.
Okay. And then let's see. So we did get a bit of a clarification on the earlier question, and the attendee clarified that without seeing the inputs to the different pathways, it is hard to review score sheets prepared by others, let's say a contractor or state regulators. They wanted to know if there is or should be a requirement to include the input information in the actual reports to help address that.
That's a good point. And I have had some folks mention that before. So you want to know what substance had the highest toxicity mobility at the site. And one of the workarounds that we had discussed for that was to put it in the scratch pad. You know, the toxicity mobility for the site is based on vinyl chloride. Or if there's, you know, more than one substance there, you can see that in the dropdown. We don't have a way to do an actual data dump. I have some applications I've worked on that will allow you to do a report, a nice report like this, but then will also allow you to do a data dump where it's just like line items for each thing you have entered in there. But the basic information is there. You know, it's showing us that we do have an observed exposure in this pathway, and that would be the 550 from the dropdown. It's giving us those target values as well. It is in there, but I completely understand what they're saying. And that's something that I can put on the suggestions thing about a way to do a data dump. Another way would be to actually provide the export XML files that we showed there along with that. And whoever's reviewing could bring that into QuickScore and see the actual QuickScore screens themselves, or, you know, a little bit of documentation in the scratch pad.
Okay. All right. I don't see any other questions in the Q&A right now, but that doesn't mean that we don't have some people typing. So we'll just hold here for just a few seconds to see if some additional questions come in. For those participants who don't have any additional questions, if you'd like to put that in a message in the Q&A, just letting Rebecca and Matt know that you don't have any outstanding questions at this time. That'll be helpful to us to make sure that we're using our time appropriately. There were a number of technical or specific application questions and comments that came in. And in those cases, we have sent some direct messages to those attendees that they reach out directly to the QuickScore helpline. So I just wanted to let everyone know that we'll be reminding you how you can access those details. But if you have a specific application question, we'll be happy to point you into the right direction. Although I did see a question that came in, Rebecca, if you're teaching this webinar, is the hotline or helpline available?
Or is it? I have 2 hours to respond. there'll be a slight delay starting at, I think we started at 1 o'clock Eastern. There'll be a slight delay in responses today. We do have other people who man it, but they tend to defer to me. So we'll get to you as soon as we can after this. Do you want to go ahead and put up those last polls for us, Jean?
Absolutely. So I'll go ahead and load those. And as I'm looking here at the Q&A, it looks like a lot of people don't have any additional questions at this time, and they are appreciative of the information you've shared. So I'm going to launch 2 poll questions right now. And these 2 questions, again, they'll show up in one window, so you may need to scroll up and down to respond. The first question simply asks, how likely are you to recommend QuickScore? Very likely, somewhat likely, or unlikely. Simply click the answer And then on the left, and then scroll down to number two, was this training helpful? And you have a few options. It's very helpful, somewhat helpful, not helpful at all. For those of you that just prefer doing this in person, there is an option to indicate that you would prefer in-person training. Once you've picked your answer for those two questions, go ahead and hit the submit button and that'll capture your response. We do have another question to ask you after this one. So please stay with us because there'll be some additional materials and other items we'll pose before we close out today. I'm hoping I just ate up enough time there. So it looks like we got almost 77% of you having responded to these two questions. So I'll go ahead and end the poll here in 3, 2, 1, and let's take a look at those results. And so, Rebecca, it does look like about 70% of the audience is very likely to recommend QuickScore, and almost 3/4 of them found this training very helpful, with a few people indicating that they'd prefer it in person.
Yeah, I think QuickScore definitely is a little bit friendlier in person. Having some thunder here. I don't know if you guys could hear that. It's actually thunder snow that we're getting here today. So
awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Did you want me to run that last question?
Yeah, if you could. And definitely put what you guys think about for an update. And if there's something that you all think about after this meeting, send an email into the QuickScore helpline, because we are looking for suggestions and definitely want to make this easier for everyone to use and more friendly for people to use. And I know that technology has made quite a bit of changes over the years.
All right. So there are two more questions. It's really one question with a supplemental additional option to respond if you'd like. In this case, in the poll window that you'll see, it's asking what change would you most like to see in QuickScore? And you can pick one from the list, either a web-based application that you don't have to download, easier way to enter potential contamination population, more training opportunities, perhaps you have no suggestions, or there is an option to pick other. And then below that, there's a second question that will allow you to type in a free text response to what your other recommendation might be. When you're done, you can hit the submit button. We're using a newer form of the poll questions here in Zoom to ask this particular one. So if you have any difficulty responding to that one or you don't see that pop up, please know you can send your response into the Q&A. So if you have another recommendation or requested improvement to QuickScore, simply put that into the Q&A window and we'll be capturing those responses and sharing it with the team here after the session is over. About 2/3 of the audience have responded here. So I'll give them just another moment and I'll let Rebecca know that I don't see any additional questions or comments coming into the Q&A at this time. So we may have responded to all of those, which is great. Again, about 70% of you have responded here on the last question. If something occurs to you afterwards, as has been said multiple times, you can always send an email to the QuickScore team. This is not your only opportunity to share thoughts and requests for improvements. There are many ways to let them know what you're thinking. I think I'm going to go ahead and close this one out at about 74% of the attendees responding. And let's just take a quick look at those responses. So I do see that it seems like overwhelmingly the audience would like to see a web-based application that they do not have to download, almost half of them, and then more than 1/4 would like to see more training opportunities. And then I'm pulling through here on some of those free response recommendations or suggestions for other specific improvements, and I will share those with you all in a separate message here in just a moment. But I want to thank everybody who chimed in and shared their responses on this particular question. So Rebecca, I wanted to turn it back to you and simply ask if there are some final reminders that you want to leave the audience with while we wait to see if any last minute questions come in.
Just here is the contact information for the helpline. The website's there, the phone number, the email. We do like to hear from you guys, and we try to do our best to get back to you in a timely manner and provide solutions or at least some workarounds for you if we can't provide an actual solution. So give us a call and or an email. Let us know how we're doing and any questions that you have, especially as you guys leave this training and start trying to download QuickScore or use it, definitely know you'll have some questions. So just reach out to us and we will get back to you as soon as we can with those. Might have a few in the queue now after this webinar, but I'll try to get back to all those before the end of the day today. And thank you guys very much for the feedback you've given us and for participating in those polls. It's very helpful, especially since we can't kind of see you as I'm doing the presentation to know where you might have a confused look or where I can see that you're glazing over because I've droned on and on for a while about a particular thing and I need to move on. So it's very helpful to get those polls and have those questions come in. So thank you guys for being a great audience today.
Excellent. And Matt, any final thoughts before I go through those closing reminders? And if I even if I get a nod or a thumbs down, that is A-okay.
Nothing to add. Sorry. Okay. I was struggling with the controls there for a moment.
No problem. All right. I see a few extra questions are coming into the Q&A space right now, along with a number of thank yous and just general feedback that this was great training. So I want to be sure to pass that on and thank everybody for sharing their thoughts. Some of the questions about the recording and presentation materials, I am about to cover those in our closing reminders. So those are perfectly timed questions. The first thing I do want to remind everyone is that we encourage you to visit us at the Cleanup Information Network or cluin.org to learn about additional resources related to hazardous waste site characterization or cleanup. And if you can do nothing else other than sending some questions and feedback to the QuickScore team, I might ask you also sign yourself up for our free monthly newsletter, Tech Direct. I send that out on the first of each month. And we'll advertise online sessions such as today's webinar in that newsletter, along with other helpful websites and resources for hazardous waste site cleanup professionals. All right, the next reminder is that we do have a seminar homepage. It's shown in red on this slide here. This is a sample screenshot of one of those homepages. We have already posted the presentation materials, links to the QuickScore resources, email to the call center or the helpline, as well as the telephone number to the helpline. All of that information is already available to download right now from that seminar homepage. I included it in the meeting chat earlier. It's the same place we sent you to in your reminder and confirmation emails, and it will also go out in a reminder email as well. So this website will remain active from today forward, so you'll be welcome to pass that on to colleagues who are looking to access resources from our session today. One thing I do want to point out on that page, for those of you who are looking for participation certificates, one of the areas or sections is our feedback form. And if you click that and fill out the feedback form and let us know what you thought of today's session, there is a box that you can check to certify you attended the entire live seminar or viewed the entire recording. And then once you check that box and submit your feedback, you'll then immediately have access to a certificate of participation that you can print out or save for your own records. I'll also email a copy of that to you, but sometimes those emails get caught in junk and spam folders. So I usually encourage people to download it from that confirmation screen as soon as they send in their feedback. If you happen to share the line with multiple people, each person can fill out that form on their own and get their own participation certificate, even if they didn't register individually. So if you happen to organize a viewing party at your location, I'd ask that you send everyone that link again to the seminar homepage shown here in red and let them access the feedback form to get their own certificate. And again, if you happen to be one of the lucky people replaying today's recorded webinar, right around now in the upper right corner, just above my head, you should have access to a button that says feedback form. And if you click that, that'll point you straight over to the seminar homepage with the feedback form. You can fill out the feedback form based on your replay of the archive and still get a certificate of participation based on replaying the session. We did record today's session and that archive will come out to you in an automatic email from me. It usually takes about 1 week, but once you get that email, you'll be welcome to access the recording again, forward that email or share it with others who will find it valuable. So with that, I want to thank all of the speakers and organizers who helped share their individual expertise and prepare today's session. I want to thank my very helpful co-moderator, Renan, in the background. I appreciate your assistance today. And I do want to thank everyone who participated. We had over 100 live participants today who shared their thoughts and questions and feedback. And again, I'm still continuing to get more messages in for our team that people found this to be very helpful, and they would love to see more training like this offered in the future. So with that, I think we can consider this a successful delivery for today's session. I'll go ahead and formally conclude today's live broadcast, and I hope that you'll join us on a future seminar. Thanks so very much.